Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
So the climate on our remarkable home planet is characterized by delayed response and amplifying feedbacks, which is a recipe to lock in intergenerational injustice.
Global warming is accelerating at double the rate measured just a dozen years ago. The target of limiting warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius over pre-industrial is dead as a doornail. Earth will warm not 3 degrees, but 4.8 degrees C, 10 degrees Fahrenheit. All this and more, according to a new peer-reviewed paper led by famous NASA scientist James Hansen. Other top scientists disagree. Is Hansen right this time? Dr. James Hansen spoke about the new paper at a press conference briefing November 2nd at Columbia University in New York City. Hosting the event was the UN Sustainable Development Solutions Network and its president, Columbia's Professor Jeffrey Sachs. You will hear Hansen's presentation and answers to two questions, including Associated Press reporter Seth Borenstein. Seth consulted other top climate scientists who dispute the extreme future painted by Hansen and his 16 co-authors. My comments follow. During his presentation, Hansen cites worries about melting glaciers in Antarctica and high sea level rise as the next approaching tipping point. You will hear Dr. Caitlin Naughton from the British Antarctic Survey, lead author of a brand new paper revealing Antarctic melt cannot be stopped. Here is Dr. James Hansen.
So the climate on our remarkable home planet is characterized by delayed response and amplifying feedbacks, which is a recipe to lock in intergenerational injustice. So we climate scientists have an obligation to explain this situation clearly as best we can, especially to young people, and to include the policy implications. Because if we don't include the implications, people who have a special financial interest will make their own conclusions. The next chart. In 1979, the Charney Report of the U.S. National Academy of Sciences estimated, based on climate models, that global climate sensitivity was 3 degrees Celsius for doubled atmospheric CO2, but a very large uncertainty. Soon thereafter, it was realized that a much more reliable measure of climate sensitivity could be obtained empirically from the precise knowledge of glacial to interglacial CO2 change provided by ice core data. But this empirical evaluation also requires knowledge of global average glacial to interglacial temperature change. And that remained uncertain because of a misleading evaluation of glacial sea surface temperatures that persisted for 40 years. The wrong assumption was that microscopic species in the ocean surface layer would migrate as climate changed, so they would always be at the temperature they prefer today, rather than partly adapt over millennia to temperature change. Now, recently, Jessica Tierney and her then postdoc, Matt Osmond, who is our co-author, developed a global temperature analysis omitting the biology data, but using widespread geochemical proxies, isotopes. And Alan Seltzer used noble gas abundances in groundwater from last glacial maximum at latitudes 45 south to 35 north to evaluate global temperatures, or glacial temperatures. In our paper, we show that the Tierney-Osmond and Seltzer analyses are consistent, implying a glacial to interglacial temperature change of about 7 degrees Celsius. So next chart, we now know the surface temperature during the last glacial maximum and the forcings that maintained the ice age cool. Together, these imply a climate sensitivity of about 4.8 degrees Celsius for doubled CO2. IPCC's best estimate of 3 degrees is excluded with greater than 99% confidence. This high climate sensitivity has major implications for global warming in the pipeline. The next chart. Clouds, which George will talk about in a minute, are the mechanism in climate models that permits a broad range of climate sensitivities. So, wait a minute. If climate sensitivity is high, how can climate models with a smaller climate sensitivity, which is most models, obtain realistic global warming for the past century? The answer, the second of the two important climate forcings, aerosols, are an unmeasured free parameter, and models with low climate sensitivity can compensate by understating the aerosol cooling. So aerosols are fine airborne particulates. They are a health hazard, killing several million people per year. Aerosols also cool the climate by reflecting sunlight to space, their main effect being as condensation nuclei or cloud drops. They slightly increase cloud cover and make clouds a bit brighter. Humanity made a Faustian bargain by offsetting a substantial but uncertain fraction of greenhouse gas warming with aerosol cooling. Now, as we want to reduce all the chronic health effects of aerosols, our first Faustian payment is due. The payment is acceleration of global warming. Next chart. China reduced its aerosols in the past 15 years, and aerosols from ships decreased in 2015 and especially in 2020, as Leon will describe in a few minutes. So we expect the post-2010 global warming rate to increase at least 50%. Which is the lower edge of the yellow area. If we are right, the 12-month running mean temperature will rise above the yellow region by next spring as the current El Nino peaks. The mean temperature for the rest of this decade will be at least 1.5 degrees Celsius warming, and 2 degrees Celsius global warming will be reached within 20 years thereafter. Although aerosol climate forcing is unmeasured, there is a great inadvertent aerosol experiment now ongoing that helps to educate us. The International Maritime Organization imposed regulations on the sulfur content of ship fuels in 2015 and tightened the regulations in 2020. This should have a detectable effect on clouds, decreasing cloud cover and cloud brightness, and thus increasing the sunlight absorbed by Earth, especially in the North Pacific and North Atlantic regions where shipping is the source of a large fraction of the sulfate aerosols. The satellite data, which Norman will talk about, suggests that absorbed solar radiation is increasing. It's highly variable because of natural variations of cloud patterns, such as the Pacific Decadal Oscillation. But since the strong regulations on ships went in effect in 2020, solar radiation absorbed by Earth has increased about 3 watts per meter squared in the North Pacific and North Atlantic. On global average, the solar radiation absorbed by Earth has increased about 1 watt per meter squared. This increase of absorbed solar radiation is the reason that Earth's energy imbalance has almost doubled since 2015. When I gave a TED talk more than a decade ago, Earth's energy imbalance was about 6/10 of a watt per square meter, which is equivalent to 400,000 Hiroshima atomic bombs per day. That much energy being poured mostly into the ocean. That imbalance has now doubled. That's why global warming will accelerate. That's why global melting will accelerate. Let's look at the absorbed solar radiation again. If this is not noise, and I don't think it is noise, this 1 watt increase is a BFD, a big deal. Let's compare it with greenhouse gas climate forcing. The greenhouse gas climate forcing on the next chart has increased about 0.045 watts per meter squared per year, which is almost half a watt per decade. So the 1 watt increase of absorbed solar radiation is equivalent to more than a 20-year increase of greenhouse gases at their current high rate of increase. That's why I can say with confidence that global warming will now accelerate. Let's first look at greenhouse gases. Several years ago, IPCC defined a scenario, RCP 2.6, aimed at keeping global warming less than 2 degrees Celsius. And Pushkar will comment on the modeling assumptions that lead to such drastically declining greenhouse gas emissions. But the real world overshot the plan. We could close the gap by extracting CO2 from the air, but the annual cost now has reached $3.5 to $7 trillion based on estimates of David Keith on CO2 extraction. The cost of offsetting the decreased aerosol cooling would be $115 to $230 trillion. Conclusion, the 2 degrees Celsius global warming limit is dead unless we take purposeful actions to alter Earth's energy imbalance. The first thing that we must do is reduce emissions as rapidly as possible. But fossil fuels are providing most of the world's energy, almost 80%. Most of today's emissions and future emissions are from emerging economies, nations that want to raise their living standards. The task is to reduce the carbon intensity of global energy to near zero. But we reduced it only from 0.8 to 0.7 in the past half century. It's not plausible for it to go to near zero by mid-century. Sweden did well by decarbonizing its electricity, in part by building nuclear power plants. Now, my last chart on the fundamental required actions, none of these are occurring. A rising carbon fee is the fastest, most effective way to affect all uses of fossil fuels. But the fossil fuel industry has prevented it. Instead of East-West cooperation, our politics and special interests have led to a focus on economic and military hegemony, which is foolish because we are all in the same boat and will sink together if we don't work together. I don't think that anyone asks young people if this confrontational approach is the kind of world they wish to aim for. The 1.5 degree limit is deader than a doornail, and the 2 degree limit can be rescued only with the help of purposeful actions to affect Earth's energy balance. we will need to cool off Earth to save our coastlines, coastal cities worldwide, and lowlands, while also addressing the other problems caused by global warming. Now, it will take several years for socialization of what is needed for the public to understand, which will be aided by the increasing problems that they will see from global warming. That several years will provide the time that young people need to understand this matter. And specifically, the fact that I believe a political party that takes no money from special interests is probably an essential part of the solution. Young people should not underestimate their political clout.
We are listening to a press briefing with Dr. James Hansen explaining the new paper, Global Warming in the Pipeline. This is Radio EcoShock.
Thank you very much, Jim. Could you, just before we turn to George, just say a word about the 1.5 degree C target and the 2 degree? You said that it's dead. Could you just explain quantitatively what you mean by that to help people understand where we are and where we are heading right now?
Well, in the next several months, we're going to go well above 1.5C on a 12-month average. Now, as we go from the El Nino to the La Nina, it will drop back below the yellow region that I showed in my chart and may fall as low as 1.4 to 1.3. But for the rest of this decade, the average is going to be at least 1.5. We know that because the planet is now out of balance by an incredible amount, more than it ever has been. You know, it's doubled. So you've got a huge amount of incoming energy. That's what causes the temperature change. So 1.5 degrees is already... It's going to be occurring in the next several months, and the average over the next several years will be at least that level. If there's more energy coming in than going out, the planet is going to get warmer, and we're already at that level. And so far as 2 degrees is concerned, you can see that the attempts to make a plan for how you could stay under 2 degrees, we're shooting way over that. And that was without considering the effect of this additional imbalance caused by aerosols being reduced. So as Pushkar will show, that the scenarios that you would need to stay under 2 degrees are just not, they're imaginary. And the aerosol just complicates it further. We can do it. We will have to do it. But it's going to require the combination of reducing emissions as rapidly as possible. But also, if we're going to avoid Antarctic, you know, there's a, well, I shouldn't go into details, but if we're going to keep sea level close to where it is, we actually have to cool the planet. We can't allow it to continue to be out of balance the way it is now, because it's melting the ice shelves, and we're going to lose the West Antarctic ice sheet if we don't cool the planet off.
Yes, thank you. I have two questions, mostly for Dr. Hansen. When I reached out to a whole bunch of other mainstream climate scientists, people like Zeke Hausvater, Michael Mann, they said, they called your work somewhat hyperbolic. They said it is plausible, on the edge of plausible, or at the high end of plausible, but not likely. And that might be fair to call some of the kinder. But they also, to be honest, say you have a your history is of being right when you're out on a limb. Why are you right this time compared to the mainstream scientists? And then the second question goes into 0.27 degrees per decade since 2010. While that was started out as a strong El Nino year, it also ended as a strong La Nina year. Are you cherry picking a start date here? I know NOAA data shows it's 0.27 since 2010. Why did you choose that date, and how does ENSO factor in to, you know, when you're looking at that change and that acceleration? And thank you for doing this.
Thank you, Seth.
Yeah. Okay, to start with, how do we get these conclusions, and are they fringe? It's very simple. The sensitivity is based on now very hard numbers for the temperature change between the glacial and interglacial times, which for decades we thought that the claim was that it was only 3 to 4 degrees. We now know that that's wrong, and the uncertainty is small compared to the change. So the physics there is very straightforward. It's the real world that's telling us what the equilibrium climate sensitivity is, and that's far better than models in which you can get any answer depending on what cloud feedbacks you put in. But as George showed, when you do improve your cloud physics and make it look more like the real world, it also increases the climate sensitivity. So there's every reason to believe that this is not fringe. This is the correct physics, and it's the real world. And it sometimes takes the community a while to catch on. There was another thing about the physics. What was the second part of that?
About the increased warming to 0.27 and the dates that you picked and the evidence.
Oh, well, that was the third part. But let me
let me
answer that third part. No, if you look at the temperature change since 1970, it's been basically was a straight line. It's linear from 1970 up to the past decade. And the point that we're starting at, if you saw the charts that Leon showed, and the change in the aerosols occurred from China and from the shipping beginning in about 2010. That's the reason to have that as the hinge point. And it's not at an extreme, at an El Nino or a La Nina. We take the mean of that curve. So there's no, it is an objective way to do it. And the other part, and this may be what I was forgetting about the second part, the physics is very clear. The warming is due to the planetary energy imbalance. If you got more energy coming in than going out, the planet warms up. We've now got we've doubled the imbalance, and that's going to increase the warming rate. Now, it's not simply based on the current imbalance. You have to integrate over time, and you're still getting some warming from additions to the imbalance that occurred 100 years ago. But as we show quantitatively in the paper, you'd still expect at least a 50% increase in the warming rate. And that's what we will soon find out, because, you know, the next few years will show that indeed we do have an acceleration in the global warming rate.
That was James Hansen, recorded at a press conference on the new paper Global Warming in the Pipeline at Columbia University on November 2nd. You can watch the full hour-long press briefing on YouTube. The title is An Intimate Conversation with Leading Scientists to Discuss New Research on Global Warming. Find links to a lot more in my show blog at ecoshock.org.
Radio EcoShock.
Let us take a few minutes for some highlights from the paper, followed by some cautions. Global Warming in the Pipeline is a long paper, well laid out and readable for anyone. It begins with a short history of common assumptions developed by American scientists since 1965. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change adopted 3 degrees C as the maximum expected when carbon dioxide in the atmosphere doubles pre-industrial levels. The mainstream assessment first set 2 degrees C warming as the line we should not cross, then said 1.5 degrees C. Well, that's dangerous. Hansen and his co-authors claim a better way to predict what adding carbon to the atmosphere will do. They focus not on CO2 levels, but Earth energy imbalance. More energy is arriving to this planet than leaving it. Most of the extra has been stored in the ocean, but that is just a delay mechanism. The delay, says Hansen, makes the situation even worse. Humans fail to see the impact of increasing planetary energy until it is too late. Now, after decades of neglect and delay, only extraordinary actions can interrupt the physics of a planetary system seeking balance, he says. Even ending fossil fuel emissions right now would not be enough, say Hansen and his colleagues, hinting at geoengineering. The new paper begins, quote, Roger Revelle wrote in 1965 that we are conducting a vast geophysical experiment by burning fossil fuels that accumulated in Earth's crust over hundreds of millions of years, end quote. So we unwittingly geoengineered the atmosphere, ocean, and ice systems. Now we are experiencing extreme consequences. Hansen and crew say we need to accept efforts to cool the planet before major cities around the world go underwater and weather becomes even more hostile. An essential question: how much will Earth warm with each addition of greenhouse gas to the atmosphere? To get a better answer, this team used new science to adjust figures used for what is called Earth climate sensitivity. They measure temperature and corresponding carbon levels at two points: the peak of the last glacial maximum, around 12,000 years ago, to a point in our recent time in the Holocene, around 7,000 years ago. That is when sea level, as we know it, more or less stabilized, indicating a planet pretty well balanced in energy. But then Hansen's group say something changed from the great cycle of cooling and warming seen over the ages. Here is a quote from the paper. The Holocene is an unusual interglacial. Maximum melt rate was at 3.2 thousand years before the present, as expected, and greenhouse gas amounts began to decline after peaking early in the Holocene, as in most interglacials. However, several thousand years later, carbon dioxide and methane increased, raising a question of whether humans were affecting greenhouse gases. Rudiman suggests that deforestation began to affect CO2 6,500 years ago, and rice irrigation began to affect methane 5,000 years ago, end quote from Global Warming in the Pipeline. Human-induced climate changes may have begun thousands of years ago. Then we found the hidden accelerator in coal, oil, and gas. Now scientists say we created a new age where humans determine the climate, the Anthropocene. A number of current NASA scientists are co-authors of the paper, presenting satellite data on the imbalance of planetary energy. Also at this press conference, Leon Simons, the Dutch Club of Rome member, who identified changes in ship emissions with a speed-up of warming, the kind we are living through now. That is explained in detail in my interview with Leon, January 11th, 2023. You can find that free at ecoshock.org. If Hansen and colleagues are right, mainstream science, as represented by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and as discussed at the annual COP climate conferences, they seriously underestimate developing warming, melting, and rising seas. None of the three actions Hansen finds essential to save us are happening. In his book, Storms of My Grandchildren, and in this press briefing, James Hansen warns we are wrecking the future for our descendants. He understands humanity will take a few more years to accept the verdict of planetary reality, but he hopes during that time young people will experience the reality and find ways